Yes. Okay, so this talk is kind of a continuation of the discussions we've already had about showers. I think it fits in rather nicely with that. And in fact, I will begin by repeating some of the characteristics of the three main approaches that are commonly used. And the first two are then the ones that are based on traditional pattern showers, one branching into two. And Herwig is then having an evolution variable that's directly related to the opening angle of these branchings here. And that means that from the very onset, you build in angular ordering and thereby coherence, destructive interference between gluon emissions. However, the angular ordering means that there is no requirement on any kind of hardness. You can start out with having a soft emission and at later stages having hard emissions. And a more severe problem is that emissions do not cover the full phase space. And also that kinematics has to be constructed at the very end. And the alternative in Pythias then to use Q square as being the virtuality of the branching part in either time-like or space-like virtuality. And this makes it easy to match to the shape of matrix elements so that you can easily have a transition from a perturbative description, at least for one more jet being emitted, to the shower emission. And also, you have some kind of measure of hardness inherent in this kind of ordering. The problem is that coherence doesn't come easily in this language. If you don't do anything at all, you tend to overestimate the amount of radiation. If you do try to, as is done in Pythia, impose an angular ordering, there are some regional phase space where in principle you ought to have radiation, but you don't get it, so you kind of do too much. And like in Herwig, you have this problem that you don't step by step know what the final kinematics is going to be. You know it a bit better, but you don't know it completely. So kind of comparing these two approaches, you could say that Herwig is geared to getting the soft collinear emissions as well as possible. Pythia is geared to get the hard emissions as well as possible. And neither of them are really perfect for doing both at the same time. And then the alternative approach is this one of dipole radiation. So there you rather think of emissions as being done not by an individual pattern, but by the color field spanned between two back-to-back patterns, in simplest case, here a quark-antiquark pair, defining a dipole that then can radiate gluons. And once you have such a radiation, you then move to a picture where you have now two dipoles, one between the gluon and quark, the other between the gluon and the antiquark. And in the number of colors going to infinity limit, this is then a correct subdivision of the color topology of the event. Of course, if you don't have that limit, then you have some deviations from it. And then once you have this picture, you have now two new dipoles, and each of those are then supposed to radiate, and you thereby successively build up more and more dipoles. It's really a picture of one dipole branching to two dipoles rather than one pattern branching to two patterns. Now, you order the emissions in Petit square. And as it turns out, Petit ordering is also something that gives you the correct amount of coherence. So this is an alternative formulation of coherence that's quite okay. And Petit is, of course, then a nice sense of hardness as well. It's also possible to formulate in Lorentz invariant fashion, so that's nice. Another advantage is that here you really think in terms of on-shell patterns all the time. It's not the patterns that radiate, it's the dipoles. So you, at each step of this successive evolution, you speak about on-shell patterns and you can define what is the kinematics at that stage of the evolution. And also, this allows us to stop and restart the shower at any given PT. The evolution is nicely factorized in terms of PT. And that means that if you want to do this kind of matching of different orders, matrix element, using this Leif Lundblad's approach to CKKW, you really build up your Sudakoff form factors, not by looking in an analytical table, but actually looking at how the events are evolved, taking into account, so to speak, the full preceding story when you define your Sudakoffs. So all of those things are very nice. There are some problems. The first one is that when a gluon branches into QQ bar pair, this is something that doesn't come natural in a dipole language. This really corresponds to taking two dipoles and remaining with two dipoles in the end that have become disconnected from each other. You will get a quark and a new antiquark here, and a new quark and the antiquark there. And the variables that you should use for describing such an emission are not so easily to define. So that's one problem. The other is that, at least as it has been developed so far, this approach is not on its own particularly suited for applications to hadronic physics. If you want to do initial state radiation with this Ariadne program, then you don't really have concepts of traditional Parton density, stuff like that. So there are a number of approximations you do, and you cannot really make contact with normal perturbation theory. There is a more sophisticated variant of this kind of partonic cascades based on dipole radiation, which is this LDC-MC program, which is based on the CCFM evolution equation rather than the DGLAP ones. This is, in principle, a very powerful framework, but it's based on forward evolution, unintegrated Parton density, so it really means that you have to provide more input, and since it's based on forward evolution, for instance, if you want to apply it to physical processes like, say, Z0 production, narrow resonance, you have all the well-known problems that it's difficult to evolve and hit the right invariant mass that you want to end up with. So what I'm trying to do here is then to suggest a way that you can take something in between, that you can incorporate several of the advantages of dipole formulas in a language that's basically shower-based. So there are a number of good points about that. I should say from the onset that you have a freedom of playing with your definition of PT. I've said that you have a PT ordering. In fact, I will choose a slightly different PT definition. That's interesting. It could mean that you get better results or worse results because this is still next to two leading order effects. But okay, I will have showers that are PT ordering, PT ordered, so you have coherence, but I will pick it in such a way that I can easily translate between PT and virtuality, and therefore use the full machinery of matrix element merging that already exists. Since it's a shower language, the gluon branchings come naturally, and since it's still borrowing from the dipole formalism, the kinematics can be constructed after each branching, and therefore stopped and restarted, and therefore you can do this kind of Lundblad variety of CKKW, and you could also do other simple matchings between different processes. I should say that so far this is just generic statement. I haven't really worked out the details. In particular, if you want to combine initial state and final state radiation, you have to watch out a bit, and I don't know exactly how to solve all the issues there. For initial final alone, I think it's straightforward what to do. And there's in fact also another application which is tying into what Peter was speaking about two days ago, namely that when we consider hadronic interactions, we have to think in terms of several things going on at the same time. On the one hand, if we just think that we have a hard interaction at some PT scale, if we trace that interaction backwards on its way from some kind of non-perturbative lower scale, you had a number of initial state radiation emissions taking place. But you can also imagine that at lower QT scales, there were several separate interactions occurring in the same event. And you then, in some sense, have a competition between whether the phase space will first encounter an ISR emission to this hard interaction or another separate interaction, which ties into how you want to define your parton densities, given that you already removed some of the stuff from the incoming protons. And if we can do an evolution in PTs, both for the ordering of multiple interactions and for the ordering of initial state radiation, we can naturally intertwine those two occurrences. And furthermore, we can intertwine a further aspect, namely that, well, this also requires further work, but at least it's possible for us to imagine scenarios where you intertwine two partons that occur in different hard scatterings, but when you trace them back, in fact, they came from an earlier branching in the cascade so that they have a common ancestor at lower PT scales. So this is kind of very ambitious and it will keep us busy for a while, but at least with this kind of approach, we have the possibility of approaching this kind of issues. Now, to mention some words about the simple kinematics, if you just think about light cone coordinates, then we have these familiar relations between PT square and, in the time-like case, the mass square of the branching mother, assuming the daughters are massless, and in the space-like case, the space-like virtuality of the produced daughter, again, assuming the other stuff is massless. So we have simple relations of this character here. And note that here I'm defining PT with respect to the mother direction. As you know, different approaches use different PT. This is in fact close to what is done in this kind of LU class PT clustering approach. And it's, for instance, then different from the Durham KT clustering approach, where you take the PT of the harder or the softer parton with respect to direction of the harder parton. So they will differ by up to a factor of two, depending on which kinematical region you are in. And Ariadne, in its turn, is using a slightly different PT definition again.
I see a question that Peter would like to couple next unit model,
yeah.
So this locus is not infrared
central. Oh, yes, it is.
It is.
In fact, I mean, this is the PT with respect to the mother direction. If you take KT class, it's that you take the harder jet, and then you define KT with respect to the softer jet with respect to that. And in fact, if you go to the limit where this is very much softer than that one there, the two completely agree. So then you get the whole soft gluon exponentiation is identical. If you go to the limit where you have two symmetrical partons, the difference is that KT is basically a factor of two larger than this PT defined here. But that's kind of a finite redefinition by a factor of two, so it again doesn't influence anything whatsoever about infrared safety or anything like that. I know that those myths have been spread, but in fact, this algorithm was 10 years earlier than KT class and did the same things. Okay, so the strategy is now that I will define an evolution equation, an evolution PT defined this way here, and then evolve downwards in this PT for time-like showers, then it's this standard expression here, but now, of course, with the advantage that I will have exactly the same evolution variables as I will use for my alpha strong argument, and then that's, of course, a Sudakov factor. For the space-like evolution backwards, you, in addition, need this ratio of parton densities. But again, that would then be evaluated at the same kind of scale here. And then once you have found such an evolution scale, I will allow myself to translate that back into a space-like or time-like virtuality, and then allow that, or use that when constructing the actual kinematics of the branching. And the PT that you then will get will depend on masses and so on and so forth. Yep?
Sir, can we go back to the previous slide?
Okay.
Okay. So, for example, in the lower diagram, you start with something which is massless.
Yeah.
And then you end up with a line B, which has Q squared negative.
Yep.
So when that now makes the next branch,
yep.
How do you assign the momentum?
So, okay, I will come to the details of the kinematics later on, but basically that's where you then make a difference. I mean, in the older approach, basically, I really try to define PTs only when knowing both virtualities you can do the kinematics exactly. In this newer approach, which is kind of the dipole philosophy, is really to say that until you really assign the next virtuality, you're free to assume that all partners are on mass shell if they haven't, so to speak, been pushed off mass shell by an explicit branching.
Do you do the space line backward or?
Yeah, backward. Backwards, yes.
So from that point of view, it's like the time. So you're not starting from NA in that direction.
No.
You're starting from NB equals to zero.
I'm starting with. Yes. So, I mean, when you start, you have an incoming massless pattern like that here. Then you assign a space-like virtuality, but assume that the mother that produced it was massless. And then later on, you will then see if this guy here came from something even earlier. And at that stage, you will then assign a virtuality there.
Something absolute. And the virtualities are constructed from this equation that you still use to build.
Yeah. But as I say, this evolution variable, or PT, will not be the actual physical PT at the very end, because, for instance, I'm not going to use light cone coordinates. So there will be some small differences, but that will be, as I say, small differences. So qualitatively speaking, you will have this as the PT ordering. Okay, so let me then.
There's always some corner of phase space for which these are.
There will be difference in some corners of phase space, that's right. But, okay, I can also show you that later on when we come to the explicit formulae. So, okay, just to begin now a more detailed review of the final state radiation, I just want to illustrate here how you think about matching the shower language with the dipole picture. So here, I will, to make it more interesting, assume you already had one radiation from an E plus E minus event, say. So you have a quark, antiquark, and a gluon. And you have, therefore, three partners that can radiate. And for each pattern, for each kind of radiation, you will then define some kind of recoil pattern. So the statement is that whenever the quark is going to radiate a gluon, say, I will assume that the recoil is going to be taken from the momentum of this gluon here, which is because these two are color connected with each other. And corresponding for the antiquark here. For the gluon, you then subdivide the full branching kernel of the gluon into two pieces, one that you associate with radiation inside this dipole here, so that the quark would have to take any recoil, and one associated with this piece here. And then we also do photon emission, but there, of course, the gluon doesn't carry a charge. So there, it would be the quark-antiquark pair that defines the dipole, and that would have to take the recoil if either radiates a photon. So the normal would really be that you have color-anticolor matched pairs to define your dipoles. But it doesn't have to be like that. And one simple example is then the case of top decay, where we want the top mass to be preserved, and we therefore say that when the B quark radiates gluons, we will use the W as the recoil partner that can have its energy momentum changed when we need to push this thing off shell. in such a way that the top mass is preserved. Okay, so with this kind of topology defined here, you can then evolve downwards. So you have to evolve this kind of possibility, that, and then you see which of them occurs at the largest Petit scale. That defines which branching will happen. And also note that these two here are characterized by the same branching kernel, but in principle, the invariant mass here and there could be different, which means that the phase space could be different, which means that a priori, there is the possibility that either of those emission probabilities is somewhat higher than the other one.
So the program just chooses that gluon is branching with the right-hand quark as a partner, or sometimes with the other ones.
Yeah, and this phase space available is to say is then different, yes, but the splitting kernel itself is 50-50. And then there are some technical details when you have massive quarks and so on, but I think we can skip that. And then once doing that, we can imagine that we do the kinematics in terms of thinking in the rest frame of the partner that's radiating and the partner that's supposed to take the recoil. So initially, both are assumed on mass shell, but then we replace that by this modified radiator, which is now pushed off the mass shell by amount related to the Petit square and to the Z, and the other one is massless still. So this means this one will gain energy, the other will lose energy, and then this modified radiator will now branch to two new, in principle, massless daughters. And Z is here now taken to be the energy fraction of the daughters, because that's then nicely matched with the matrix element that I want to compare with, which means that the actual Petit square gets to be this more messy expression that doesn't really look like the evolution Petit square at all. But you can, for instance, note that if Z happens to be exactly equal to half, then this thing here minus that thing there exactly equals that thing there. So in that case, Petit square does coincide with Petit square evolution. But if you move away from Z equals to half, the actual Petit square you construct is then somewhat lower than the one you assumed in the evolution. So that's a mismatch.
So what are you doing in the step again? I'm not sure I understand the step B.
So the statement is, if you decided one partner is going to branch, and you decided that the recoil effect from that has to be taken somewhere, you had all partners being massless. Now you decide that one of them is going to branch. This means it has to be virtual. But you, if you want to conserve energy momentum globally, you have to decide where to take the energy to push that particle off mass shell. And the recoiler is then the partner that, so to speak, has to give some of its energy to allow that to happen. And that will then lose some energy, and this guy will gain some energy.
And if the radiator is the gluon, it's the complete gluon for momentum.
Yeah, yeah. So now, I mean, the gluon is not split in the terms of consisting of two quark antiquarks, but it is one gluon. It's just you decide which of the quark and the antiquark will take the recoil. And then you continue like that, and you then build up a sequence of gradually decreasing Petit scales. And that's one common sequence, so you will always be able to stop it at some point and then continue from that point onwards. Okay, so this algorithm, if...
Yeah. When Z gets small, yeah, it happens, then the M squared scale is very different from the P squared, can be very different from the P squared evolution variable.
Yeah.
Is that right or wrong to take P squared, P perp as the evolution variable? I've never understood this.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Is there a right thing to do there? Are you supposed to take P perp or M as the evolution?
I mean, there's certainly a choice you can make. I mean, the reason for make, in PT square in general, the evolution variable is this issue with coherence. And then the reason why I want to have an alternative interpretation in terms of M square is that the M square variable, I mean, if you just write down a matrix element, you will have propagators that are functions of the M squares rather than of the PT squares. And therefore, if you want to do a matching so that in the hard emission region, you easily can make use of matrix element information, it's convenient to rewrite it so that you have access to both variables at the same time. But sure, I mean, different PT square definitions, I don't think any principle a priori picks out which PT is, so to speak, the right in a language like this thing here. So all of those would be higher order. But as I say, coherence tells you that PT square is a better variable than M square for soft gluons.
But now I'm confused, because this radiator approach should take into account the coherence.
Yeah.
Not worrying about rigorous PT ordering.
Well, no, it does take into account PT ordering. Of course, you can always ask...
No, I mean, you impose PT ordering.
Yeah.
But I thought if you use this dipole radiator approach,
yeah,
that incorporates the coherence.
Yeah.
And so in principle, you don't have to order things if you prefer to have coherence work correctly.
No, but the idea... Well, but you still want to have your Sudakov form factors built up correctly.
Okay.
So I guess you could define them somewhere else and then have an unordered PT evolution, but that's... sounds more difficult to do than to really first consider the hardest emission and then go downwards in PT.
Yeah. So the question is whether you want to have a PT ordering or an M,
mm-hmm,
M1 ordering.
Yeah.
And so when you radiate soft gluons, these can be different.
Yes, they are different. And as I said, the problem with mass square orderings in the soft gluon region is that if you only order an M square, you don't get full coherence. And if you then in addition try to impose angular ordering, you get too much of it. So that's somewhere in between. Now, I should say that very often people show these scary plots where you show that without coherence, you get partial multiplicities that go through the roof. It's not quite that bad, because when people do that, they don't even obey energy momentum conservation. Because those plots are made in linear approximation, where a quark that radiates a gluon still keeps the full energy. So whenever you do that, in fact, the differences are not dramatic. And at LEP energies, it's hardly possible to see the difference. But if you then take the LEP data and try to extrapolate onto what happens at a linear collider, and particularly if you go to Click, for instance, then you really see that for instance, Pythia and Herwig part way in how much multiplicity they predict by a fair margin. Okay, so luckily enough, I got the help of Gary Rudolph, who's an Aleph member. Well, I don't know if Aleph exists any longer, but anyway, he was the guy that did a lot of the Aleph fit to event generators. So he did one for this new algorithm. And, well, you see lambda comes down to about half of what it used to be before, but that's mainly because of changes in the kinematics, that now there is no penalty to be paid for the fact that your daughters can also have a mass when you define the mother of the mass of the mother. So I think I understand pretty well why that's happening. There is also the lower cutoff, that's the other main parameter of the shower, which tells you when you're supposed to stop. And in principle, physics shouldn't really depend on that if you have a good matching between what you call perturbative and non-perturbative physics. But of course you don't, so people try to use that to tune. And previously, in fact, people tended to get a somewhat higher value, about 1.6 GeV when you use mass ordering. Now you get something that's 0.6 when you use PT ordering. My default that I kind of wanted was something like 1 GeV.
You already told us that PT doesn't necessarily represent the minimum, the real PT reconstructed in the shower.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
What does the real
Oh, but it's about that as well. I mean, it's not much different.
So those two segments
coincide. More or less, yes. But I mean, the problem is that even if you worked real hard to define the correct PT of one branching in the shower, then after that you would do another branching. And then the PT you thought you had would anyway be changed by what happened in that successive branching. So it's never possible, I mean, it's basically impossibility to really have a PT definition of a branching that will be unchanged by anything that happens afterwards. So in that sense, yes, I'm messing up the PT a bit, but it's not very much. And anyway, it's going to be messed up for other reasons. So in general, it's a very small effect on that scale of things.
Why are you putting up this incredible precision?
Well, you know, I mean, this is just based on their statistical precision, and then they kind of define some kind of chi-square. And I mean, these parton density people can say everything about what delta chi square equals to one gives you if you take it seriously. No. Well, that's why I also don't call it lambda ms bar or something like that. I mean, that's exactly why I avoided that notation. Oh, no, you shouldn't take this seriously, sure. This is not the serious definition of lambda, that's for sure. Okay, now we come to this thing here. Okay, for some reason the plots didn't do so well in full screen mode. But anyway, this is then an example of what you get comparing the old and the new. And I think that most of it is really fairly standard. These are different event shapes for E plus E minus data at LEP. And so the top is showing the comparison, the bottom is showing the deviation in terms of standard deviations. So I'll come to the interesting plot in a second. Okay, so here you have some more stuff, and it's really not changing very much. The one thing that always, or at least has been a bother, I think for all generators actually, is this PT out. So you look at single particle distribution out of the event plane, and then there's this region around between 1 and 2 GV ballpark, where in fact generators have problem getting the shape right. And as you see here, I mean, it's generating a lot of chi-square from this particular region. It's gotten a bit better in the new, but not very much. On the other hand, you should note this, that it's in this region where you get this big chi-square. You couldn't really say that it's an awful looking. I mean, it's just that the data are very, well, okay, this is a log plot, of course, but the data are fairly precise, and that generates a lot of...
Sorry, what did you plot here?
This is, you define, say, sphericity, aplanarity, you define an event plane.
PT out.
So you look at the transverse momentum particles out of the event plane. Okay, now I can go back to...
Now, there's no E plus E minus to 4 jet amplitudes in here. This PT.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's by the shower, yes. Mm-hmm.
But you get the tail of it right.
You get the tail of it right, yes. So most of it is okay, I mean. And here you see now the chi-square comparing the mass order and PT ordered. And as you see, PT out, if you use the full region, gives you enormous chi-squares. If you restrict to that region, it's more sensible. So the total kind of per degree of freedom is not looking too great. But this is somewhat deceptive, so we can also look at it this way here. Let's assume that, well, Monte Carlo is not supposed to be perfect, right? So let's assume that we introduce some kind of tolerance meaning to how good a Monte Carlo should be. And let's do that by introducing, say, a percentage called P here of the value in a given data point that you allow the Monte Carlo to be wrong by adding that in quadrature to the experimental definition of error. And then you find that basically what you need to do is add ballpark 1% of the value to come down to something that's of the order of chi-square of 1 per degree of freedom. So basically what this is saying is that this generator is ballpark correct to 1% and the rest is statistical fluctuations.
Well,
except...
it matters how it compares to other models previously, too. I mean,
yeah.
Because maybe previous models didn't do
that either. Yeah, I mean, I didn't put that on. I think that in general, at this plot, Ariadne always did best and Hurwig always did worst. And Ariadne was at about the level of this thing here. Yeah, yeah. But you mean this thing here? But I mean, in the previous, I put it here. Yes.
Oh, I see. So. I didn't see a plot for this.
Okay. So this is kind of the difference that it fell by about a factor 1.5 in some chi-square. So it's better. And as I say, it's about at the level of where Ariadne is. But you have to be a bit more precise. I mean, I didn't dig up that and look into it. This is what I got back from. Okay. Well, okay, maybe I should have then said this thing. Yes. So you said it's good to 1% except in this region here. You should also notice that, well, the one thing that I liked about it was that, in principle, if you go up, most parameters are stable, but this PT min is the one that's kind of creeping a bit up. And I was somewhat unhappy about this low value, so that's, of course, in some sense nice. You should realize that the difference between the old kind of mass-ordered shower where you had a cutoff of 1.6 GeV was that then you were generating something like 4.5 gluons per event. With this newer, very low value, generating 13 gluons per event. So it's an enormous change in the amount of showering activity, which, as I say, I think is really corresponding to very small changes in chi-square. But since you're looking for a minimum, you're really pushing yourself in slightly different directions. But OK, I mean, it's also nice to know that the string fragmentation model is stable. It can take care of things like that.
So the string fragmentation then eats up the excess model.
Yeah.
How big does alpha S get in the generation, you know, with the PT min being what it is and everything? And so when you look, when you look through your evolution histogram of what alpha S is along the chain, how big does it get?
I don't remember. I don't think I histogram, but you're right. I mean, it's getting to be pretty high.
That's why you're worried there, because you're worried that you're going to alpha S values that are very big.
Yeah. But I mean, again, the string will take care of it. So this is kind of very small mismatches between the showering and the hadronization that kind of gets amplified, and the end result is fairly stable after all.
I don't know how we quantify this, but I think the question that I'd like to know is the string becoming more cluster-like? In which case, you know, we've always known that there's coherence built into the string model.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why, I mean, the string effect is the great triumph of the string model, which is also described by Hurwig.
Yeah.
So perhaps you putting more of the correct physics into the showering.
I don't know. I mean, this was kind of just looking at this kind of global properties. What one should look at, which is kind of the triumph of the string model where the cluster model fails, is in things like baryon-antibaryon correlation or charge correlation, things like that, where kind of string model does show this kind of structure that kind of is not there in the cluster when you do isotropic cluster decays.
Also at high Z, the fragmentation function at high Z.
Yeah.
The cluster model doesn't get enough high Z, but the string model does. It's probably in those plots there.
It was. Okay, fine. So I think
you have these soft gluons, and you're effectively you're kind of wrinkling the string, right?
Yeah.
You're putting small kinks on it.
Yeah.
You're making the string more wrinkled.
Yeah.
Yeah, making which breaks it up into little bits, right?
No, but the string is still drawn around these wrinkles.
Unless you have drawn to organic ones, then.
So okay, you have a bit more of those, but that's still not a big fraction of the branchings that's gluon going to quark anti-quark. So you may have, instead of having the whole system being one single string, maybe it breaks into two separate strings, but not more than that. Okay, I think this is taking more time, but I think I should be a bit shorter with the ISR algorithm, because that we anyway didn't come as far with. It's kind of a work in progress. It's working, but there are some technical minor details to be sorted out, like massive forks and so on and so forth. But the idea is the same, that you have radiators. In this case, you only have the two incoming radiators, and you evolve them down in PT from a common PT max, and you pick the one that branches at the largest scale. And then you do the kinematics, where you start out from having two incoming partners that are massless. And in this case here, you then need to redefine kinematics to let the partner on the other side give away some of the energy, well, in fact, take some of the energy from the one that becomes space-like, in such a way that the invariant mass of the system remains the same. And then one reconstructs the pattern that was the mother of this branching that we just decided we wanted to have, and moves to a frame where this new mother and the recoiler are back to back. And okay, it's not so. It's the other incoming partner, yes.
Recoiler?
Yeah.
And what about the color? Is it a dipole partner also?
That could be a dipole partner or not. I mean, I'll come to that question in a second. That's more relevant when you then come on to attach final state radiation to it. So hang on to that. But yes, I mean, in a hadronic collision, very often they would be correlated. Okay, so again, the way it's done, the actual PT square that you will have at the end of the day, this guy here, with respect to new radiation, is going to be this expression here, where this first term was this PT square evolution, and you have one additional term that's behaving like this thing here. So again, when you get large Q square, it's slightly different, but at small Q square, it's approaching the same value. And again, the reason that you get this mismatch is that I'm using a definition where S hat is equal to X1 times X2 times S, which ensures that when I do the backward evolution, I can keep, say, set zero that's on Machel to be, remain on Machel in the backwards evolution. And as I say, this hasn't really been tested so much. Here is some kind of first comparison with the PT spectrum. And it's maybe not exactly as promising as I hoped. I mean, it's not bad, but we always had this problem that we had this large KT value, and if you use that, then in fact you have a very, I think, sensible description of the PT spectrum. The problem is that in principle we don't like this value. We would want to have a smaller value, but if you do that, then the peaking is taking place at somewhat smaller PT values than is observed in the data. So this is kind of this problem we always had with Pythia, and it survives this change of transformation of variables. I should say this plot was in fact taken from the master's thesis of Eric Thomé, so you can look and find some information. You also have an article here summarizing some of the stuff in the Lesouche proceedings. Now, you notice in the other slide, maybe, that I also started to play with lambda QCD. The reason for that kind of came out of some studies we did with the old evolution, where you, in fact, find that there are different things that are done in a shower that are, in fact, not done when guys define the PDF evolution. And therefore, kind of, if we want to use something that does the same rate of evolution in X as the showers do, then one way to do that is compensate to reduce the emission from such cuts by using a slightly higher lambda QCD. And in fact, we looked into how big those effects are, and you need to change lambda by a fair margin if you want to have the same X evolution. But if, unfortunately, it turns out this is mainly something that's changing the peak height rather than, in fact, the position of the peak. So it's not quite as big an effect as you might have thought. The other is this question now of combining final state radiation and initial state radiation. And the issue here is that you can very well imagine that if I started out with defining a branching like this here, where you assumed that the time-like pattern emitted had mass equal to zero, and you then decide that in fact this will shower on its own, we are pushing up this mass, and then you could easily push down this petit here, and that in fact is an effect that also is going on. And if we take it for the example of set zero production, then in the old algorithm you start out with a set zero here, and then you move outwards, backwards, adding more and more emissions. But in each emission, whenever we allow a radiation here, there will be an effect of this kind that the PT shrinks in the branching. If we now think in terms of the new algorithm, then exactly we have this issue of what are the color dipoles. We could certainly do something like in the top case and define a set of dipoles that go via the set zero, in which case the set zero would take a recoil. But a more logical scenario here would in fact be to look by the color flow and say, since the set zero is colorless, it will not attach to the dipoles, and we will have a set of dipoles taking care of the final state radiation that will not affect the petit of the set zero. And of course, inherent in such an argumentation is then also the idea that what you're thinking about time-wise is that the final state radiation associated with these branches here should occur at smaller petit scales than the radiation of the gluon itself, and thereby, so to speak, at longer time scales, and therefore, presumably at times when the set zero, in some sense, already is defined. So I would therefore assume that this is the best alternative, and that's then kind of the assumption built into the previous plots. Just to illustrate with the old shower, this is kind of now seeing what is the difference using different lambda values. You see for Higgs production, the peak comes down, shifts a bit, but not very much. And here you again see, including or not final state showers, which is the way you do in the old machinery to estimate the effects of such recoils. And you see the peak comes down, you get a better fit here, but again, it doesn't really shift very much in position.
So I would say that the way that the re-summation calculations are done, it was more similar to your approach you just outlined. There's no energy conservation, right, in the CSS formalism, in any non-joint resummation formalism. And so actually by doing this PT ordered and having the color dipoles taken up the recoil, that's more closer in spirit to what the resummation calculations do.
Okay, so...
Sorry, I want to ask... I just asked David this question privately.
Okay.
Stimulated more by asking.
Yeah.
So, in this calculation, the maximum of the PT distribution is very closely tied to the PT min, or the KT min, which is in the...
It's not really related to where you stop the partner showering, no.
Sorry. So. I missed what the parameter KT is.
Okay, it's primordial KT. So you assume that your partner shower initiators way back at the very small initiator scale has some kind of primordial KT. And then as you go inwards, part of that will be radiated away, but some of it will survive into the hard scattering and then add to the perturbative.
So physically it's not reasonable to take that out of
BTG. Physically it's not reasonable, which is why we want it to be lower. And the problem is that if we look at the CDF data, it's problematic to do it like that in this framework.
So the question...
I shouldn't say it's the final word, but...
If you have the kind of very sophisticated resummation formula that he has for the spectra, is there some other origin for that effect, which is not in the shower, but which basically could explain why this thing is round at a higher PT than you would expect?
Well, the formalism that's designed to do just this and not everything has built into it some functions that you can fit to experiments and somehow that's in Bithia too, but it's in kind of the inputs in the parameters comes from elsewhere. So I think you'd expect Bithia not to do quite as well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the point is that, for instance, Helmwig does agree better, so then you kind of need to understand exactly why the generators do.
In this plot, are you just running the 2-to-1 and then radiation on it, or is this two-to-two?
No, I mean, out in the tails.
Instead of running QQ bar goes to Z with radiation, you run Z plus jets with radiation and plot that out here.
No, I mean, this is QQ bar going to set zero and then showers.
What happens if you run?
No, let me finish the sentence. But when you go to the hyper T tail, in fact, the shower is deviating from the matrix element by plus minus a factor of half, and that is then corrected for.
I know that.
So, I mean,
perhaps if you just run this, just for curiosity, because I remember comparing the Z data I would always just run the Z plus jets, you know, the 2-to-2.
Yeah,
and
well.
Compare everything, all the whole way around with that. I know that sounds goofy.
Yeah, it does.
I'm just going to keep on doing it.
Yeah.
It depends on what you use for the cutoff.
Not for the set zero.
When you run Z plus jets, you know, the 2-to-2.
I mean, well, yeah.
2-to-2.
Yeah.
And you plot the Z distribution all the way down.
Yeah.
Distribution Z all the way down to zero.
But I mean,
doesn't diverge.
For that particular case, for multiple interactions, you have explicitly put in a regularization factor, 1 over pt squared plus pt naught squared squared. And, no, okay, fine, but I mean, we haven't. Okay, fine, I mean, also for the case of set zero, there is a hard cutoff at something like 1 GeV. So whatever you do, the program will not let you hit the singularity. But in principle, you could get any cross-section you wanted by playing around with that parameter. So it's not a physically particularly interesting exercise.
Right.
But I mean, the problem is really that we would like to have a value like this, whether it's 0.6 or 0.4, which really doesn't change the plot. But then you have some difference. Again, it depends on what you would say with a bad fit or a good fit. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's also not a disaster. So, but of course, it would be interesting to understand, is there something we can do that would make it somewhat better? And what I'm saying is that we tried a few ideas and you can help it a bit, but it's not so easy as I had hoped to play around with this, which could be good or bad. I mean, it's fairly.
Presently, isn't the underlying event model set up so that it doesn't transfer any PT to the system?
Yes, that's right. So the underlying event is
that the right physics?
Well, I mean, that goes back to this very first plot, but the one that I had at the beginning, where I said that in principle what we want to do next is to intertwine showers with multiple interactions.
Right.
At that level, you could start to then also have them correlated with each other. But that's, of course, not an easy task. I mean, nobody ever tried it before. So we will.
Because the recoil is taken into account by this too.
But then you're saying that Hurwitz, which doesn't have this, is able to fit the data better.
Well, just if you put a KT in.
Well, that's for some other reason.
For Z production, if you put a KT in, then Hurwitz fits the data, just like Pythia fits the data.
Aha, so what KT do you have to use there?
I don't recall it being much KT.
No, sure.
The shower does it all. You can set it to zero, but the shower
and the metric sediment correction, there's nothing else.
What?
Is the shower and the metric sediment correction, there's nothing else. There is no paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the best fit from a totally collinear path.
For the best fit to the Z production of
you
the
can put a KT in here. You need a parameters.
Okay.
Oh, no, 2 GeV, but at least 1 GeV.
It's default is zero.
The co-author would say.
No, I can't remember what my co-author does off the top of my head, right?
Okay.
But I don't remember it being that big.
Okay.
About 2 GeV? It's certainly more than 1 GeV. I don't think that anyone has done any as detailed of comparisons as they have been done for Pythia. But then
you looked at it and said that looks okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think I should probably finish now. It's kind of, as I think you've already seen this plot, so let me not go through that again. And then just say this is work in progress. So there are a few things that we should settle on, particularly for initial state radiation. But I think it's looking okay. So I'm fairly optimistic that this is an approach that one should take in the future, that probably using PT is a good choice and a good thing to do, and that you can really combine this PT ordering in the shower language and kind of possibly have the best of both worlds. Okay.
Yeah, I think especially for CKKW, you know, I think this is a good approach to make things more seamless. Actually, I interrupted your applause, so.